Welcome to Iteration, a weekly podcast about development and design through the lens of amazing books, chapter by chapter. My name is John, and as always, I'm joined by JP. Hey, JP.
Good evening. How's it going?
Hey, it's going pretty well. I honestly completely forgot that we needed to record until about 6 p.m., and I was like totally like chilling in the local brewery, just unwinding, reading my book, and then it was like 6.05 p.m., and I was like, oh shit, we're recording tonight. So then I was like, okay, at least I've already done my reading. And so then I was like, okay, let's start thinking through my notes.
Nice.
And then that's when I started slacking you all these different ideas that I had for notes for this episode tonight.
Cool. Yeah, I'm super excited. So today we're going to be going through chapter 5 of Sandy Metz's very classic practical object-oriented design in Ruby. In the Ruby circles, it's known as Pooter. And this is chapter 5, which is titled Reducing Costs with duck typing. So this is going to be a good one about duck types and polymorphism and all that good stuff.
I'm excited to jump in. So it sounds like we've got no chit chat this week. We're just going to blow right in. I love it.
Yeah.
So the first thing is like duck types. I've heard of this idea and known what it is. And I know that I've used it in the past, but it wasn't, again, Sandy Metz like was able to put words and descriptions to things that I have used and kind of known ethereally and really made it more concrete for me. And so I'm really excited to kind of share those findings and walk through that. But let me just talk a little bit about what a duck type is conceptually, broadly as I understand it. And you can let me know if that matches what your understanding is.
Totally.
So Sandy says, a duck types are public interfaces that are not tied to any specific class. Another way she says it is that objects that are defined more by their behavior than their class name. And it really kind of boils down to this concept. If an object quacks like a duck, it walks like a duck, it flies like a duck, it's a duck. You can call it a duck for all practical purposes. And there's a super contrived example, but it's a good way of explaining duck types overall. I felt like I read a lot of different blog posts about duck types this week. I really wanted to understand, make sure that I understood the concept as best as I could and understand the ways that I'm already using it and just to be more aware of how I'm using it. But you know, everybody talks about like, you can have a duck type of, let's say you have an object that's a duck, an object that's a goose, an object that's an airplane. All three of those can be a duck type on the behavior of fly, because a duck can fly, a goose can fly, and an airplane can fly. So in a way, they all share behavior and they can all behave in specific ways that they're able to share. But the way that those three things don't share behavior is a quack. Like an airplane does not have a quack method. So in that example, an airplane would not be a duck compared to these others. So duck is not a technical word for anything here, and it's not necessarily specifically an object called like duck.new. It's just conceptually, if something behaves in a certain way and it's defined by its behavior, then we can start calling that thing a duck or a duck type. Did I get that kind of right?
Yeah, totally. Let's provide another example, because I feel like the first time I heard that example, like something very similar to that, it just didn't like really stick with me. So I have a note about polymorphism. And so duck typing is a type of polymorphism. And hopefully this example that I'm about to go through will provide a little bit more clarity for those of you that are still like, what the heck is, okay, so it has a fly method, but doesn't have a quack method. This is all still very like contrived. Okay, so let's take a step back a little bit. What's polymorphism? Polymorphism is the ability for different objects to respond to the same type of message or to the same message. Receivers supply their own specific version of this behavior. Okay, so like, what does that mean? So think about in Ruby, we have like dynamic typing, right? So like, it's not static. So you don't have to declare variables as being like a string or a number or a Boolean or whatever. But think about what you can do in Ruby. If I have the string A and I add the string B, I'll get like the string AB. Essentially, it concatenates the two. And if I do 1 plus sign 1, I'll get 2. And if I add two arrays together, I'll get like a concatenated version of that array. So this plus sign, like strings can respond to the plus sign. They can receive the plus sign, numbers or integers rather, and arrays can receive this plus sign. So this plus method here is polymorphic. And in a way, this is like a duck type, right? Because like I can use it in many different contexts and the receivers implement their own different behavior. So like maybe a string, when it receives the plus, it like multiplies it by 3 or something like that, or like doubles it. That's like what's cool about it. So you do use it when you're in Ruby and you like might not even realize that you're using it.
Wow, that's a really good description of it. And thinking of that operator of the plus sign as being a duck type is really a unique way to look at it. And I've never really thought about that. That wasn't in this chapter, was it? That's something that you came up with.
There was like a little note on polymorphism. And I think if you struggle to understand polymorphism, this might be one of those examples you'll find on the internets. It's one that I found maybe a while ago that I was like, oh, okay, that kind of makes sense. So it's like, if you think of the plus symbol as like a method that different types of things can, that it can be called on different types of types, if you will, it's sort of like made more sense on like what polymorphism is. So like, as you're talking about like different kinds of like things that fly, like birds, airplanes, Superman, they would all have like, potentially they would all have a method called fly. And you could call fly on these different types of things, whether it's an animal, a superhuman, an airplane. It all can receive that message fly. And once it receives it, it will implement its own specific behavior on what it will do. We just have to be confident that these types of like flyers can respond to fly and do, you know, whatever the heck they want to do.
Yeah, and it's important to note that they're not responding to fly in the exact same way necessarily. So it's not just a duplicated method across different classes. This is a method that you're expecting it to respond to, and it responds to and calls it in the same way, but it doesn't necessarily implement the exact same behavior. And let's start walking through this example that Sandy lays out. And so she really goes back to this example of a bicycle touring company, and we walk through this kind of startup that she was explaining last week. But let's continue to explain this a little bit. So the idea is that there is this new company and it's a bicycle touring company. And there's within the company, you have trip coordinators, mechanics, drivers, participants, bikes, and you have all these different objects that interact in the database here. And the idea is that me as a user, I can book a bike tour and I can do a mountain bike tour or road bike tour. But she's going to talk about, in this example, the specific concept of preparing for a trip. So there's a lot of different trip preparation that needs to happen. You have to buy food. You have to tune up bicycles. You have to pull the bicycles out of storage. You know, you have to schedule the drive. You have to gas the car. So there's all these different behavior that all these different objects implement. So for example, the trip coordinator will confirm the schedule. The mechanic will tune up the bikes. The driver will gas up the cars. So all these different objects have to prepare for a trip. In her initial example, the trip object implemented and called all these specific objects and their behaviors. So within trip.prepare, it would say, okay, trip coordinator dot buy food, mechanic dot prepare bicycles, all those different steps were calling their own objects. And there was this really long method that depended on all these other objects and messages. So the way forward to start cleaning this up is to create this new duck, this conceptual object called a preparer object. This doesn't live in the database. It's just a Ruby model, a class that you build out where you can pass in who's doing the preparing. And then that preparer duck type can call the prepare method. And so the idea is that trip can simply call prepare and the array of things that need to prepare. And then on each of these things, it can just call trip coordinator dot prepare for that trip, mechanic dot prepare for that trip, and pass it in accordingly. And then it's sharing behavior and reusing this in this new noun of this idea of this preparer. All right, now clean up the mess that I just made, Jimmy.
Okay, sure. So let's break this down into digestible chunks. So
cool.
Let's say you have this idea of a trip. We're inside the trip class and we know we need a prepare method. And, you know, this is V1. We need to ship out an MVP. And the only thing we need right now is a mechanic. And inside of the prepare method, we pass in a mechanic as an argument. And we say, okay, on the mechanic, I want to prepare bicycle and I'm going to pass in the bicycles. And you're like, okay, this works. Like, you know, at this stage of the code, like this, all we need for a trip to be prepared is the mechanic, right? So it's like, okay, cool. So I can expect that this idea of a mechanic, whether or not it's actually a mechanic or a person or a robot, it will be able to receive prepare bicycles. And at this stage, this is totally fine. And then, you know, a couple weeks go by and you're like, okay, well, crap, like actually to prepare a trip, we need more things. Like we need more objects. We need a trip coordinator, like you were saying. We need a driver. So what do you do? So naturally, the natural progression of, you know, if you overlook this idea of like duck typing, you would have like a case statement and you would, instead of passing a mechanic, you might pass in an array of prepares, right? And then so you would iterate through these prepares. You would do like a prepare.each, and then you would throw in a case statement. And in the different instances of these prepares, in this example, it's like you're switching on the different classes. So in the code example, it's like case prepare, because you're inside of this each iteration. So when mechanic, prepare.prepare bicycles. When trip coordinator, prepare.buy food. When driver, prepare.gas up. And so it's like, okay, so now I have three different classes that are inside of this prepares, or inside of my prepares array. But then, you know, you start to think like, okay, well, this doesn't really scale. Like, what if I have three or four or five or six different prepares that I need to add in order for this trip to finally be prepared? And so this is what we're talking about when we're talking about duck typing, is there's not necessarily another class that needs to be created, but conceptually, we can start to think of these different classes, the mechanic, the trip coordinator, the driver, as types of preparers. So what we do, instead of having these different methods that they respond to, for example, like we needed the mechanic to respond to prepare bicycles. We needed the trip coordinator to respond to buy food. So these are the different, like, this is like the variation between each of these types of prepares that made this case statement just like out of control. It's like super bonkers, because like they had different methods that they need to respond to. But conceptually, we can think of each of these different things, preparing bicycles, buying food, gassing the car, filling up the water tank. These classes are essentially, in their own ways, they're just preparing something, right? They're just preparing the trip. But in many ways, the names of these methods are like the implementation details, right? So like, if we can start to think of these as duck types, as preparers, if we don't think of them as like a trip coordinator and a driver, and think of them as just like from a higher level, what are they doing? They're preparing something. So they're preparers. And so if we can like make the interface that they respond to all the same, we can trust that inside of that shared interface that they're going to be doing, they're going to be implementing their own specific way of preparing a trip. So for example, if we dive into the mechanic class, instead of calling it prepare bicycles as the method, we can just call it prepare trip. And inside of prepare trip, it's going to prepare the bicycles. Now, if we go inside of the driver, instead of doing driver.gasup, and instead of doing driver.fillwatertank, we can just have the same interface. It will just be driver.prepareTrip. And inside of driver.prepareTrip, you would gas up and you would fill up the water tank. And so every time you add something, every time you add another duck, another preparer, you just give it the same interface, prepare trip, and inside of prepare trip, it does whatever the heck it needs to do to prepare that trip. And that's all we're talking about. Okay, how was that?
That's a really good, yeah, that was good. And it's a good distinction, because you're totally right that preparer is not a new object or class. I totally misspoke there. It's a way to think about our existing objects, to group them into their own kind of global duck type, which is these preparers. And so a mechanic, a trip coordinator, and a driver are all preparers. But I think you kind of glossed over one important part, which is all three of these classes, mechanic, trip coordinator, and driver, now all share the same method of prepare trip. And one of them for now only has one method, which is prepare bicycles. Let's say the mechanic only has one method in there, and it feels a little bit redundant to do so. But this makes the code so much more elegant and easier to change in the future, because now when the mechanic needs another step or needs to modify a step to prepare for a trip, you have a distinct interface to do so within its prepare trip method. So let's say not only does the driver need to gas up and fill the water tank to prepare for a trip, let's say they also need to buy Slim Jims. And it's as easy as adding one method into the prepare trip call that also buys Slim Jims for the trip. And that just makes things super flexible and reusable across. I guess I have a little bit of confusion though, how you're initially calling the preparers in your trip class. Can we walk through a little bit more detail on how that works within these objects? So you essentially, what I'm seeing is that you're passing in the array of preparers into this prepare loop, and then you're calling prepare trip on each one. Oh, so this completely gets rid of that whole switch statement of calling specific methods on each specific model. I kind of just put that together. That's awesome. Wow.
Yeah, totally. So you would have like an instance of trip, and then on it, you can call prepare and pass in an array of preparers. So in this case, it'd be like maybe a mechanic, a trip coordinator, a driver, whatever you need. Maybe you give it two mechanics. I don't know.
Yeah. Wow. It's just such a powerful concept when we start thinking through it. And this one feels a little bit less contrived and a little bit more powerful than the whole idea of like ducks and airplanes. And so I think it's a good example to walk through. But I sent you a code example from one of my live code bases, and a refactor we're currently working on is this notification object. And it's a pretty embarrassing model as is. I mean, everything's running and it's decently performant, but you know, this current notification model that we have currently implements SMS notifications and email notifications. But this week we were starting to dig into the idea of also sending push notifications from our platform. And in the context of reading this, I kind of wanted to walk through some different ideas and approaches. We may not solve it fully in this conversation. I'm not looking for free work here. We may not solve it perfectly in this conversation, but I'm trying to look at how we could use what we've learned from duck types to extend this notification object into maybe finding that missing noun to be able to make a more elegant interface that's possibly shared between these different notification types. So, like I said, right now we only have email and SMS, and there's a straight up switch on the notification type and it sends them accordingly. But we're adding a third to it. So it's like, it's increasing the complexity by an order of magnitude once again, because right now it's switching on the two objects and then all the sub objects the notification might reference. But now we're multiplying that whole mess by three. And so it's just really starting to bloat our model. So I wanted to kind of talk through some different approaches that we could do to do that.
Yeah, totally. Let's try to find like the hidden duck, actually. So what line am I looking at here? Am I looking at line 156 in this code?
Yeah. And so the main struggle here, line 156. So we have this whole concept of matches notification settings. So every user on the platform has their own notification settings. And notification settings is a database object with a bunch of different columns that define all the different settings that they've set. So, you know, whether or not they want to receive notifications of comments, whether or not they want to receive notifications of new group discussion posts, reminder texts, message notifications. So if you picture kind of that notification setting screen on Facebook where you have this big grid of checkboxes for what you do and you don't want to get messages for, that's part of the thing. But now we're extending that whole grid with a third column instead of just two columns. Right now there's two columns of email and SMS. So we're now adding this third column, which is this idea of email notifications. There's a lot we could go through of nuances of how we're implementing the notification settings. Essentially, we're going to be moving from a bunch of Boolean columns to probably, we haven't decided yet, but to probably each of them being their own array. So it's like in the first place, second place, third place, but that's a whole different conversation. So let's assume that the whole nuance of the how to define out notification settings is solved, but I'm going to talk through this real quickly. So like, when we're talking about the send notification method that we have here, there's this first method that gets called that says, okay, if it matches the text message notification settings, send it out. Or if it matches the email notification settings, send it out. And then there's these giant case statements that switch on their object type. So when it's a comment, it checks the column of notification setting post comment text. When it's a discussion post, it checks the column of notification settings dot group post text. And that's like line 166 that you see there. And yes, we're talking through code, so I apologize. We're doing our best to keep this simple.
Okay, cool.
And so,
I was going to say,
yeah, go ahead.
Are each of these a different class? So is there like a comment class, a comment conversation class, a reply class, mm-hmm. a discussion class? Okay, so everything we're switching on is a class itself.
Yes, it is the class, because when a notification is created, it just stores the class of that object and the ID of that object. So we have like, I believe it's called the reference object ID and the reference object type. And so it's a little bit of a clunky polymorphic object in that the notification object can call something like reference object. And we're able to find and look up that object really easily because we can just call the string of the class type with the ID. And so if it's a comment notification, we can just go reference object, know its comment with ID of 1,327. We could pull up that reference object quickly. Now we've done a little bit of work to try to kind of duck type these reference objects because, for example, we have things like notification summary that exists on every class. So comments have a notification summary, replies will have a notification summary, and those are implemented in their own way. So we're already using duck typing a little bit in that way. You can kind of start to see that code coming through and it's getting a little bit better, but I really want to try to find a way to use a duck type, and it may not be the best implementation. We can talk about why it's not, but I'm hoping to be able to find one here that helps us switch on these notification settings, because Sandy was saying that basically anytime you switch on a type or you kind of, or is a, any of these case statement switches are code smells that we can start recognizing a duck in there.
Okay, cool. I just have a couple questions. What do these methods do? So for example, when it's the reply class calling the method comment reply texts, what is that doing? Is that sending like a reply message?
That's only returning true.
Oh, oh.
So all lines 156 through 176 are doing is actually finding whether or not for that object, if that user wants to get notifications for it.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. I should have known that because this method has a question mark at the end. So that sort of indicates in Ruby land.
It's a predicate method.
Yeah, so that this is like, it returns a Boolean.
But it's also like 24 lines long. So I don't blame you for not seeing its method right
okay,
away.
Okay, cool. Okay, so these are Boolean columns on these classes. So for example, like if I look at reply in Rails console, I could find a column that says comment reply texts. And that's like either a true or a false.
Kind of. So the if you look at the Boolean column, it's actually calling against that user's notification settings for reply. So like one line 163, case when the reference object is reply, let's check for the user we're trying to send the notification for. Do they currently opt in to receive notifications via that method for comment replies?
Got it. Okay. So interesting. I mean, it looks like we're already starting to use duck typing here, because if you look at discussion and program discussion template, both of those methods are the group post texts. So I think I think the duck here is just, I don't know what the like higher level duck is, but I feel like if you were to just have all of these classes share the same interface, you can just return that. Like you wouldn't even need to iterate through anything. You could just return that. You could return like notif_settings.group text or whatever it is. I don't know what the common interface would be.
I think you're totally right that I think that I'm giving too much responsibility to the global notification object, and this should be split into their individual objects that respond to the same interface. So I'm trying to like check to see if it matches the notification setting and then send out accordingly. When in reality, I think what I'm looking for here is some type of a notifier duck. And then that notifier can just respond to .should_send? And then a .send. And then we can wrap the should send method into each of its own classes. And I feel like that kind of solves it all. But the thing that's like, it's hard to do that is because it feels a bit ambiguous to wrap all of this into this notifier class. And then the second part is should send on a notifier type. What ends up happening is instead of having one global notification object that switches on all these different things, what I really need to have is individual notification objects for each notification type. So there'll be comment notifications, reply notifications, discussion notifications. And I feel like it cleans all this code up, because basically what I end up then is with like six different objects that are each only 30 or so lines long, and then one global notification object that's only 60 lines long that handles all the send logic. And that's where I'm leaning to go, which is the duck here is the notifier and splitting each of these notifications into their own objects. And I think that's the direction I'm thinking of going, because then for a comment notification, a discussion notification, I can use all the same interfaces for all of these different notifications.
Totally. Yeah. And I'm so glad that you voiced a little bit of concern. They're like, oh, but you know, this makes it like kind of abstract. Like it sort of like obfuscates the intention almost. And this was actually touched up on in this chapter. Like, I think there's a section that's like, well, surely there's consequences. Like, we can't just be all willy-nilly and turn everything into a duck type. Like, I can't just make everything a repair. I can't make everything a notification. And so I pulled out this quote that I think is worth talking about a little bit. And it's this, quote, concrete code is easy to understand, but costly to extend. So taking a pause really quick, concrete code as in like switching on a bunch of different things. Because if you think about it, when you switch on every single class, I could tell you exactly what's going to happen. Given some inputs, I could tell you exactly what the outputs are, right? Like, I know exactly what the implementation details are because you're calling it right there. It's sort of like when you have a really long method and a bunch of if statements. If you really wanted to, you can sort of like, you can grok through that and read a 50-line method and know exactly what's going to happen. I mean, is that the best way to go? Maybe not. Okay, anyways, I digress. Concrete code is easy to understand, but costly to extend. Abstract code may initially seem more obscure, but once understood, is far easier to change. Use of a duct type moves your code along the scale from more concrete to more abstract, making the code easier to extend, but casting a veil over the underlying class of the duck. The ability to tolerate ambiguity about the class of an object is the hallmark of a confident designer. Once you begin to treat your objects as if they are defined by their behavior rather than by their class, you enter a new realm of expressive, flexible design. End quote. And so that's sort of like what we're talking about, right? Like, you have to have the confidence to be able to sort of make things a little more obscure for the sake of extendability. Now, obviously, you shouldn't like go absolutely bonkers and make everything just like way too abstract that you can't like follow your code at all. But I think there's like a very fine line in doing this kind of a thing.
I love that quote of the ability to tolerate ambiguity about the class of an object is the hallmark of a confident designer. And you're totally right that like a bunch of if statements packed in a 300 line class is kind of more clear in a way because I can follow exactly what's going on in one place. But it's impossible to change or extend. And this whole notification concept as a whole, perfect example of how painful it is to try to extend to add this whole new push notification concept. It's really holding back the platform right now and needing this refactor to do so. I want to talk real quick about polymorphic objects. I know there's going to be a future chapter on it, but I want to give a quick example of within the health coaching platform, we used to have participants, programs, applicants. We have all these different types of objects. And we used to have notes only on participants, and they were called participant notes. Like that was actually what they were called in the database. But the specification came through like, hey, we love this idea of being able to leave notes on things. We also want to implement that for programs, applicants, other stuff on the platform. And this was a perfect use case for reaching for a polymorphic object because now we use this global note object through a notable module. And in a way, notable is a duck type that's applied to different other types of things. So for example, now a program has many notes as notable. And so we can call program notes, but under the hood, it's actually using all the same note model and the same note in the database column. So we have multiple objects across our platform, all storing to the same database table of notes. And it's super flexible and powerful. They all have their own controller and view, but under the hood, they're sharing the same model and database. And if you haven't started using polymorphic objects, I would strongly recommend you look into it, but I'd be careful to not overuse them because once you discover it, it's really easy to go willy-nilly. But if you're wanting a lot of specific model behavior on a particular object, it's not a great place for a polymorphic object. But something like a note or a comment or things like likes, I feel like likable is always a really common example for polymorphic objects because then it's like, okay, you can like an image, you can like a comment, you can like a post. So those are my two cents about polymorphic objects, which is like not really a duck type, but it is totally a duck type at the same time.
It kind of is, yeah, because if you think about it, like, you can like comments, you can like posts, you can like pictures. So we have this idea that something is likable, but you don't want to have, but then you have to like think at a higher level, like how do I make this into its own object? Well, you make it like a likable object. And so if it like walks like a duck, quacks like a duck, talks like a duck, or whatever the saying is, then it is a duck, right? So like, that's totally a really good example of how you can use like how polymorphism is a type or how duck typing is a type of polymorphism. And that's just like another example of how it can be used.
Absolutely. I liked Sandy's notes on recognizing a duck. And so she was saying specifically, you can replace the following with ducks. Like every time you can do so. Case statements that switch on class, anything that has a kind of call in it, and is a call in it or a response to call in it. Like those are all opportunities to find the duck. And, you know, she talks about finding ducks and the different approaches, but then she ends with this quote in that section of quote, you're just missing an object, one whose public interface you have not yet discovered. And I feel like it's one of those things that's really hard to know until you see it. But once you find a good duck, then your whole interface starts to make so much more sense. And yeah, I just wish there was better, like more rich examples of good duck types in Ruby, because a lot of the examples around the internet are super contrived.
Yeah, totally. I think just the addition example that we talked about first is like kind of a good example of duck typing.
Yeah, just conceptually.
I think it's just one of those things that sounds like super crazy, and you probably, I don't know, maybe this is just one of those things that like you've used in the past but didn't realize, like, oh man, it kind of makes sense for these two classes that sort of do the same thing to share the same method name. That way I can use instances of both of these classes and call the same thing on it. Like, that's duck typing right there. It's nothing crazy. It's just a pattern that needs to be recognized.
Absolutely. Cool. You want to jump into picks?
Yeah, you go first. I realized that I don't have it written down in my markdown file.
That's all right. My pick this week is probably, I don't know, I've never picked this in the past, and I guess I've never really played with it before. It's always something I've like horribly avoided because it always seemed like hacky and awful, but dot files. And I was at RubyConf a couple weeks ago, and there was a whole talk on dot files and the power and what they can do. And so like I finally, like by choice, opened up my ZSHRC, which is like the dot file, which is, it starts with a dot and it lives in the root. And probably half the people are listening is like, oh God, you're explaining what a dot file is. But hey, we don't know the level of people that are listening. And as well, like I know what my bash RC is, what my ZSHRC is, but like I've only known what they are so that I like had to configure them for my node modules folder to get like my in path. I just never really took the time to like actually sit down for even just 30 minutes and like go like, okay, like now what is all this shit besides like script kidding it just to like make shit work? So it's always something that I've avoided, to be completely honest. But I started actually playing with it a little bit this week. I didn't even take much more than an hour, and I found all types of cool shit, and I feel way less intimidated when I have to modify that path and all the different things within my ZSHRC. But anyway, I would just encourage you to not be afraid of your dot files. Explore it a little bit. Google it around for your particular code editor, not your shell of choice, I should say. That's the more accurate way to say it. For your shell of choice. But like I got this awesome theme going on and a custom prompt with like, it shows me not only the current directory I'm working on, but you know, my current branch and whether or not my code is committed, all within my prompt. So I've got this custom prompt and I'm just like, I'm digging it. I don't usually get fiddly with this kind of shit, but I'm really digging it. And I just encourage you to just like explore dot files, have an open mind. Don't avoid it. Just jump in.
Nice. You're just like, you know, you're one step closer from using Vim. You'll get there. Don't worry.
No. It's not going to happen. We'll see.
Yeah, that's really cool. I love my dot files. I even have like a repository on my GitHub so that if I ever switch machines, I can have like my dot file config right there. And I have like a script that will like download all of my Vim plugins and all that stuff. It's pretty cool. And then I have like different branches based on like the different machines. So I have one for, I have a branch for like my work machine. So I could just like clone the repo and then like check out my work branch machine. It's pretty cool.
Oh, shit. You just like completely one-up me, man. That's crazy. You got the dot files on lock. I'm just like starting to teeter into it. I'd have backed them up. I knew enough to back them up from machine to machine, but I don't have like the public repo and like have the dot file cred. I'm not there yet.
It's just, mine's basically just script kiddie amalgamations of like a bunch of really good dot files from people on the internet.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Anyways, I guess my pick is, this is going to be unique. My pick is these new house slippers I just got. They're super fuzzy. Check them out.
Oh, damn. Oh, they're actually super cool. They look like kind of like moccasins.
Yeah, they're like moccasins with fur inside. It's this brand.
These are like old man fresh. That's cozy.
Yeah, the brand I think is Quaddy, Quoddy. I don't know. I might be not pronouncing that correctly, but they're super comfortable. I just moved into my new apartment like a month ago, and we don't wear shoes in here because, you know, we don't live like animals and savages. So I wanted to have, you know, house slippers, and that's my pick.
I love it. That's awesome. Thanks so much for listening. Please tell a friend about the show. We'd love for you guys just to kind of share it. You know, tweet at us. If you go to iterationpodcast.com, you scroll down to the bottom, you can find me and JP's ugly mugs. If you click on them, you can tweet at us. We'd love to hear from you guys. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you guys next week for the next chapter of Pooter.
Sweet. Thank you guys so much for listening. Next week, we'll be talking about classical inheritance. We'll talk to you guys next time.